Good evening, good afternoon, and good day. You're with DJ Hecky Hot Tracks. Welcome to my podcast. This time we have Mr. J.E. Serrano, prominent author on the way up, you know. He's written two books so far, The Vasvago Cynical Vampire, and a new release that's just coming out. It just came out. The Tour Guide, Prayers for an Assassin. We're going to have a conversation with this gentleman and see what motivates him to write these very interesting books. So, how you doing, bro?
Hey, what's good, baby boy?
Hey, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Okay, okay.
All right, so let's get right to it, you know. What does VSV mean? Like?
The Vasivagal Syncope Vampire.
You can't say that again.
The Vasivagal Syncope Vampire.
Vampire. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And what inspired the book? What made you say that you wanted to write a book about vampires when it's been done a gazillion times already? What makes yours so different?
Well, it has a small history behind that, and that being that at that particular time, I had contracted meningitis,
right,
and I was laid up in the hospital, and the doctor was drawing blood from one of the patients beside me,
right,
and the patient passed out.
The patient passed out?
Passed out when he was drawing the blood, and I asked the doctor, why'd he pass out?
Right.
And the doctor said he suffers from vasovagal syncope.
Wow.
So it's actually an ailment.
That's actually an ailment. Like, yes. This is actually something that a person is sick from.
Yes. Something. Yeah. They it's an ailment they suffer from. And a prime example of that is fainting goats. You ever see those goats that faint?
Yeah, they suffer
from that as well.
Okay.
So anytime any kind of tragedy hits you, you faint.
Right.
Either the sight of blood or something that scares
you. So this vampire sees his own blood and
faints.
For us that not, you know, let's break it down for people that are not as sharp as you might be, right, or are. They see blood.
Yes.
A vampire, which is known to suck blood in order to survive.
That's his nourishment.
But he sees blood and
faints.
He faints at the sight of his nourishment.
Absolutely.
That's kind of, the irony in that is pretty sick.
It's thick, yes.
Right.
So that's the twist that I try to bring to a book that, you know, to a subject that's been written about 1,000 times.
Right. So what like inspired the book? What was, what made you just say, like, well,
you know, in the beginning, before that happened, I was a dancer, a musician, an actor.
Right.
It's a triple threat.
Right.
And that meningitis took all 3/3 away.
Wow, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, as was I.
Hey, you came back and you wrote a book, two books, though.
Well, you know, the strange thing is that I had to do something because recovery from that type of illness is very long recovery.
Right.
And so I was going stir crazy, so I had to do something with myself. So I decided, let me write this book.
Right.
So I wrote the vampire book, you know, and you know, it got good feedback and everything like that.
Okay.
It wasn't a smash that I would hope it would be, the movie.
Well, I guess, you know, when you're doing something for the first time, you want it to be just the best thing in the world, right, to you.
No, you know, but the best thing is, the Hecky Hot is that when you have to work for it, it means more to you. So okay. If it would have been a quick flash in the pan, I wouldn't have appreciated it.
Yeah, I agree. How long did it take you to write the book then?
8 months.
8 months?
Yeah.
So you did research on this or?
Well, I'm a studyist. So okay. The occult, vampirism, comparative religions, philosophy, I'm into right. All that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So it's fairly easy for me
so
to write.
So it's actually, are these cast characters, are they actually people that existed in the history books? Or are there people that you just fabricated?
No, there are like one of them, one of the main characters is actually Cain, the son of Adam.
Okay.
He's the first vampire.
The first son of Adam. Adam and Eve.
That's the curse of Cain, is to come back as a vampire. He was cursed. Read the book.
Okay. No, I totally get it. He was cursed. That was his curse for doing what he did.
Right.
Right.
And so following that, I came out with the second book. The Tour Guides,
right?
Prayers for an Assassin, and that's slightly derivative of Dante's Inferno, where Dante had to go through hell, and the philosopher Virgil, through the prayers of Beatrice, escorted Dante through hell.
Right.
In my book, the assassin Tony Palmer is finally assassinated.
All right, but we're fast forwarding.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're fast forwarding. We're still on the vampire book.
Yeah. Oh, we're still on the vampire. My bad.
Who's like your favorite character of the book?
Oh, that would have to be Shao Xin.
Shao Xin. Shao Xin. Interesting name.
Shao Xin is a tiger.
It's a tiger.
That the main character, Diego, in his insanity of vampirism, is attacked by a tiger, and he turns the tiger into a vampire.
He bites the tiger.
Yeah, he bites it and drinks its blood and transfers blood back and forth. And okay. So the tiger becomes a vampire, and the character and the personality that the tiger brings forth is just, I really enjoyed it.
Right. So this is Cain's curse.
Cain's curse is vampirism. His disciple is Diego, who went to the third Crusades of Richard the Lionheart, had gone to Jerusalem, got lost in a sandstorm, and Cain found him and turned him into a vampire.
Wow, that's pretty sick. So, next question.
Yes, sir.
Is like, what could people expect from this book when they read the book? What should they expect?
I think they should expect that you can discover, if you're open to it, that you can make bad things better. You know, so Diego took a curse that was upon him and flipped to the good.
Right.
You know, so...
So Diego wasn't the type to go at night like a vampire, a normal vampire, and just feed on the innocent.
Cain's law was you cannot kill the innocent. So any vampire he made that killed the innocent, he would kill.
So how did they feed?
Well, for evil people.
Okay, so you have to get all of the evil people.
You can only drink on evil people.
That is interesting also, because inherently, vampires are considered evil.
Right, exactly right.
That's a pretty interesting twist.
Well, I think it was Cain's attempt at redemption.
Okay.
You know, so
for what he did for killing Abel.
Exactly right. Okay. For spilling Abel's blood.
Right.
He had to drink blood.
Now, where does God fit in all of this? Because, you know, you're mentioning Cain, and we know that they're Bible figures characters. Where does God fit in all of this?
Jesus is in it.
Jesus is in
it. Jesus is in it. Because when Cain turns Diego, he's on the brink of life and death, and Jesus appears before him, sad that, you know, that he went down that path.
Right.
And so now he said, now you're twice cursed.
Oh.
And the two curses was, one, vampirism, and two, you faint at the sight of blood.
That is so crazy.
Thank you.
How does this guy actually survive then? What, does he close his eyes when he's biting?
Vampires are psychic. You know, so they know their surroundings. Once they see their surroundings, it's instantly memorized. So then he just closes his eyes and drinks.
So as long as he doesn't see the blood, he won't faint.
Exactly right. And Cain found that out because the first time Diego fed, he didn't want to feed on a human, so he fed on a cow. And when the blood sprayed on him...
Sort of like Interview with a Vampire, when if you wanted to find Louis, all you had to do was follow the trail of the rats.
I didn't even think about that. That's excellent. Yes, exactly right.
Follow the rats, Louis!
And so how he found out that Diego suffered that was when he bit the cow and the blood sprayed on Diego's face. Diego fainted and the cow ran out because of the pinch on the butt, you know, where he got bit.
Right.
And here goes Diego being dragged out by the cow with his fangs sunk in the cow's butt.
That's pretty crazy. That is definitely pretty crazy. What about... I see you touched on vampirism and all of that. What about, I mean, you're dealing with the occult, these issues, and we're also dealing with the dark world, the netherworld, correct?
Yeah.
So, do we have demons in this? Absolutely.
Satan comes out to battle Diego. Satan, yeah, man, there's a whole battle
Satan
royal.
Oh, Satan battles Diego.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. So, in all reality, Cain is protected by God, so Satan's pissed off that he's protected by God because he's cursed to walk the earth forever.
Yes.
Wow. So throughout this book, there's going to be assaults or attempted assaults by Satan and his nemesis.
And his minions.
His minions, excuse me.
As a matter of fact, Diego turns someone that reverts to evil and winds up being Diego's nemesis.
That's nuts.
Yeah, so his the guy he tries to mentor into vampirism turns into his nemesis.
Okay. All right, so it sounds like it's a really interesting read, you know? And
it was definitely fun to write.
Right. Well, I mean, was it, what do you do to get into this type of realms where this mindset that you have to write about things of this nature?
Unfortunately, that's just the way my mind works.
Oh, that's how your brain works.
Yeah. I'm interested in things that, I don't want to say are inexplicable as opposed to curious in nature.
Right. So, this book was done when exactly? I know because it's been out for a while already.
It's about 2.5 years ago now.
Okay. You thought this was going to be the bestseller. It's going to be on the bestseller
list. Everyone thinks that way.
You know, as long as it's on your bestsellers list, I think that's all that matters.
I absolutely had fun
while you was writing it.
Yes. And the people that read it tell me they enjoy it.
And you accomplished a phenomenal feat. You've written a book.
Yeah, I think.
And it all came from your imagination.
My demented imagination.
Yes. Pretty demented. Pretty sick. Vampire. Don't like blood. What do we got? We got Cain, cursed to walk the earth.
Yeah.
We got Satan. We got demons.
We got tigers that talk.
This is VSV. That's Vago, Cynical Vampire.
And yes, I purposely named it that difficult name. I could have named it the Fainting.
I could have named it the Fainting Vampire. I've been saying this.
Yeah, but my problem is that I always look to educate. Right. I always look to teach, you know?
Right.
And so I'm like, how many people know this, that there's this ailment, you know, called vasovagal syncope?
Right. I never knew.
Yeah,
I've never heard of anything fondly, just like anything next to that. My closest thing would be hemophilia.
Okay.
You know, that would be like you're a hemophiliac, you know, you bleed a lot.
You can't stop bleeding, yeah.
Right. That's crazy. Oh, let's fast forward, man. Let's go to this next project that you had. You know, this interesting title. This one's pretty legible, right? it's not VSV.
No, it's not.
It's the new release. It's Tall Guy's Prayers for an Assassin.
Yeah.
And this came from where? Where did this?
Inspired by Dante's Inferno.
Dante's Inferno,
and
your cast of characters are from where? Are they like
my imagination and part of my childhood? I grew up around some people that kind of fit the bill.
Wise guys.
I grew up around wise guys. I did.
So
this is about an assassin that finally gets assassinated, and he's so bad the devil doesn't want him in hell, and he can't go to heaven. Because of the things he's done.
Right. So.
And so there's something, a clause that's called Dante Solace.
Right.
And during that time in the 15th century, when the figure of Dante Alighieri went through what he went through, God had decided to create a system that he called the Celestial Courts, where you have a demonic judge and an angelic judge that preside over a demonic prosecutor, an angelic defender, 6 blessed souls, and 6 damned souls that sit in jury.
This is the netherworld. It's not exactly the netherworld.
No, it's the afterlife. Right.
The spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How long did this take you to write?
About 8 to 9 months.
Same time.
Just about.
Right. So who's your favorite character in this book? Who did you have the most fun writing about? Like,
you know,
is it macabre? Is it like,
no, it's not macabre.
It's about a hitman. So, do we read about, you know, him actually performing the hits in the grotesque manner that he did them in?
Actually, it's more skilled than grotesque. It's not a bloody kind of thing. This guy's an elite assassin.
He's clean.
Yes, very clean. Surgical.
He's a cleaner.
Surgical. Yes.
Okay.
And my favorite character, I think, was, I would have to say Tony.
Is there a family Tony's involved with?
Yeah, there is. There is a family, the Niccolo family.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, this is a big family that's, you know, running New York City.
Right.
And he becomes involved with it because, as a boy, his father beat him and everything like that. And then he got put in the juvenile center when he got caught stealing.
Every now and then you got to catch your beat.
Every now and then you got to get the backhand.
Right, right.
So Tony gets put in the juvenile center. And so these bullies come and pick on him. And that's when his first kill comes along. Well, it's actually not his first kill. If you read the book, you'll see there's actually a kill that he's blamed for before that.
Right.
And he kills the kid that is trying to pick on him, and somebody buddies up with him that his uncle is the chief, one of the chiefs
of
the mob. Right, exactly right.
Guys.
So they escape from the juvenile detention center. And they run to this uncle, and this uncle sets him up. And well, the guy asks for a job, and the uncle's like, "Why should I give you a job?" And then a little friction occurs, and they finally get a job, and it goes from there.
Tony he stuck his foot in the door,
and Tony kicked the door down.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Does this guy have a love life? Does he have a family?
Actually, yeah. There are two women he meets in his life. You know, during his lifetime, that he falls in love with. Obviously they both die, but one dies just trying to play with him.
What do you mean play with him?
I can't tell you. You gotta
read
the book.
Okay. So he's this hitman who's a cleaner,
yeah.
Right? And because he's a cleaner, he doesn't sleep well at night. Well, he sleeps well at night, but he sleeps in a very protective way. Like, he'll sleep with both eyes open or one eye open. And my guess is that she tried to do something to him, and he it broke up.
Okay, you know, you're pissing Arthur off really quick, man, because, you know, I know you didn't read the book. And
yeah, I didn't
here
read
you,
the book. I mean, just,
yeah,
he's a guy
you're
that
exactly
works
right.
people up for
yeah.
a living, so he's got to be on the edge.
Yeah, you're exactly
he's
gotta right.
He's got to be on the edge,
yeah.
and the girl probably touched him a certain way, and he thought it was life-threatening, and he wound up killing the girl. And he's probably really hurt over it.
He was torn up behind it. Torn up behind it, yep. And then the second woman he meets actually bears a child for him. And,
yeah, she has a baby.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
And then she passes on. You know, she passes on from an illness.
What's really interesting is the way you blended. Like, the first book was about this very occultish, granted, it's very occultish, very third realm, or Middle Earth, or whatever people might want to label it. It's very macabre, Halloweenish, you know, deals with, you know, the darker side. I like the way you took, even though Tony's a dark dude, but it sounded like you took this book, this character, this whole reference to him being in the mob, being a cleaner, being a hitman, and then you involved the spirit world. You know, it's sort of like you're in your writing, in comparison to your first book, and then now this book, you're blending that in, you know?
Well, I think the spirit world and the physical world are naturally connected.
Right.
You know, spirit to some people is nothing but energy.
That's what I heard.
Right. Right.
Positive, negative energy,
right.
Yin and yang.
Right. So, you know, that being said, I think to try to separate the two, it kind of leaves something hollow. You know, because we all, in one way or another, feel connected to something. And so, if I were to write trying to separate that, to me, it wouldn't feel genuine.
Right. So Tony, basically, he's this hitman for hire, or just works for one family.
He works primarily for one family.
One family.
Yeah.
So when he goes to the Celestial Court, right, and he's in the middle of it all, is this Celestial Court in Hades, or is it in Purgatory?
It's in between. It's in between the realms.
In between Hades and Purgatory? I didn't even know there was an in-between.
There's always a third state.
Purgatory.
There's always a third state.
I thought purgatory
positive,
was
negative,
and then
neutral. There's always
neutral.
A third state.
Right. So he's trying to get absolved of his
He's trying to get him. Wouldn't you try to get absolved from that? Yeah, so he's, you know, he didn't go in with any type of real confidence until he found, you know, found out that they're the two loves of his life, you know, petitioned God to have mercy on his soul.
That's crazy. That's crazy. So how does he finally go? Like, Adam, let's leave that for the book. I don't want to
It actually takes a real cool turn. I really like the way I flipped it around and made him. Because the obvious thing is he's going to go to hell because of what he did.
Right.
You know,
or what he's done.
What he's done. And yeah, and that, you know. But then the devil don't want to let him in. Because he knows this is a wild soul. I don't know what kind of havoc he would cause in my realm.
He might cause problems with me.
Yeah.
I can't kill him. He's already dead.
He's already dead.
And I am one soul. It's already because you've been killing people.
Yeah.
And murdering people for hire.
You know? So, you know, and he might have that type of soul that would absorb that.
Is he good with his kid? Does he take the kid to play baseball? You know what I mean? Does, you know, he thinks he's a normal person? Or like, you know, I saw the special on Iceman.
Yeah.
Right? And the documentary is very interesting. They called him the Iceman, not only because of the way he killed people. It was because he killed people because it was work to him. And he would do it sometimes just to see their expression change on their face. This is how normal it became for him. And then he would do it and then go home and play with his kids. And he was a regular family man. You know, if you saw him, he was a regular family man. You wouldn't think anything of him. He was a big brolic guy, bald head, you know, beard and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just a mass murderer.
Well, and that was probably Tony's saving grace, is that he never killed with his heart. He killed with his head.
Okay. Okay. Very interesting. Killed with his head and not with his heart. No emotion, intellect, or foreign emotion.
Exactly.
I right. before E.
And that was his saving grace.
So that's his saving grace?
That's his saving grace.
So that's going to keep him out of, or allow him, well, listen, we already know he's not going to heaven. He can't go there. Obviously he can't. But judging by the smile on your face, the smirk on your face, you're like, read the book. We'll find out what's
absolutely,
going on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so what's next, man? What do you got next going on?
Actually,
you know, I know this is available on Amazon.
Amazon, yes, Amazon.com, baby.
And you just
yes.
got it published the other day. They just released it.
It just released, yes.
Right.
Yes. So the next book I started.
One more thing. I want to ask you. The artwork. Who is the artwork by?
Great. No, I got to blow him up.
You went a different direction with this one.
Listen, this guy is outstanding. Jay Maniacal.
Right.
He's a tattoo artist out of New York City. This is my brother, okay?
Okay.
This guy is just. When I brought him the idea, I said, Jay, this is what I need. And I described it, and he put a New York spin on it.
Right.
And it's off the charts. Oh my God. Actually, my brother was the first one to see it because they used to be roommates.
Okay.
And he turned me on to him, you know. So when he saw it, he was like, oh, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. And my brother and I are always, we get along so well that we can be contentious in a very loving way, right?
Right.
And so when he told me I'm going to love it, I'm thinking, no, I'm not. I know his, you know.
Right, right.
When I saw it, I was like, I don't know. But then it just grew on me. I was like, this is deep, man. You know, it's like, I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah,
even though I described it, I didn't expect it the way he interpreted it.
Yeah, so his
interpretation
was just crazy.
It really was.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So much respect, Jay Maniacal. I love you, boy.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Okay. So getting back to what's next. What's next on J.E. Serrano's plate? What is he going to be writing next? What is he writing about? When can we expect it?
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm sure you're familiar with the adage, there's nothing new under the sun. Everything has been said, written, and done. That being said.
Right.
This one is somewhat derivative of C.S. Lewis. He's a very great author. And it's called The Renovation of Hell. So basically, the premise of that is that...
I'm shaking my head right now.
The premise of that...
What else would he write about?
Right. The premise of that is the 20th and the 21st century, mankind has lost his mind between splitting the atom, looking into the cosmos, finding the subatomic world, polluting the earth to just crap. And the atrocities he performed upon, you know, his own brother and sisters, hell wasn't big enough anymore.
So it finally caught up to him, is what you're saying.
So the devil decided it's time to renovate and make it bigger. And so with that came complexities that were unforeseen by the command, you know. And so
the command is whose command?
The devil's command. Make hell bigger to his demons. And so now the demons have to make hell bigger, but there's a bunch of complications. And so the book comes with a bunch of demons writing letters back and forth to one another
about the difficulties. Demons having conversations with each other
about
what's
the difficulties
going on
of hell, and then upper management finding out and telling them, you know, how they feel about everything that's being said and what's going to happen.
You have a vivid imagination, brother.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
It's pretty amazing that you would come up with stuff like this.
Well, remember, it's somewhat derivative of C.S. Lewis, you know. I can't claim any originality behind it, except for the little way I twisted it.
Right,
the one book I'm speaking of particularly.
Yeah, what are you referring to?
It's called The Screwtape Letters. Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis.
Okay.
And so that plays with demons writing back and forth to one another. So that took that idea and said, okay, what can I do with that idea? And I said, let me renovate hell, because the 21st century has been a monster, you know. And
that's pretty good.
Even though it's new, so.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
And I know of a couple of people that need to be there.
As do I, unfortunately.
It's just opinion. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah.
At any rate, once again, I loved your books, man. Can't wait to for your next project. You know, I can't wait to get my hands on the tour guide. And thanks for stopping by.
Oh, hecky hot. You the man. I thank you for your time, brother.
All right, brother. Thank you very
so
much.
So good. Thank
Until
you, brother.
Next time, man. You guys go cop that new book, The Tour Guides, J.E. Serrano, Amazon. I'm Hecky Heck. I'm out, guys. Have a good one. I think it went pretty good.